ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 स्कन्ने Retasi so Pashyat Atmanam Deva Mayaya Jari Kritam Nripa Shveshta Sanyavartata Kashmalat Skanne Retasi Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Jari Kritam Nripa Shreshta
Jari Kritam Nripa Shreshta
Sanyavartata Kashmalat
Sanyavartata Kashmalat
Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Jari Kritam Nripa Shreshta
Jari Kritam Nripa Shreshta
Sanyavartata Kashmalat
Sanyavartata Kashmalat
Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Skanne Retasi So Pashyad
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Atmanam Deva Mayaya
Jari Kritam Nripa Shreshta
Jari Kritam
Sanyavartata Kashmalam
Sanyavartata Kashmalam
O Maharaj Parikshit, best of kings, when Lord Shiva had fully discharged Saman, he could see how he himself had been victimized by the illusion created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he restrained himself from any further maya. Purport. Once one is agitated by lusty desires upon seeing a woman, those desires increase more and more. But when semen is discharged in the act of sex, the lusty desires diminish. The same principle acted upon Lord Shiva. He was allured by the beautiful woman, Mohini Murti. But when his semen had been fully discharged, he came to his senses and realized how he had been victimized as soon as he saw the woman in the forest. If one is trained to protect his semen by observing celibacy, naturally he is not attracted by the beauty of a woman. If one can remain a brahmachari, he saves himself so much trouble in material existence. Material existence means enjoying the pleasure of sexual intercourse. Yan maitunadi grihameri shukam. If one is educated about sex life and is trained to protect his semen, he is saved from the danger of material existence. So material existence is actually an illusion. It doesn't exist. Material nature is there. The material energy is there. But actually material existence is an illusion. Because the living entity is never actually in material existence. It's not their position. The living entity is eternal. So this is not, there's no such thing as material existence for the living entity. So he thinks he exists in this material energy. And because of this thinking he exists here, then those things of this world become very important for him, very dear to him. He'll look around what it is that would please him, what he would like to have in his sphere of illusion, and then he endeavors to gain those things. He works very hard to gain whatever he can in this area. So this we see then is the point here. So of all the things, then sex is the most impressive to the living entity of the illusions, the most endeavored for aspect. If that is in place, then in connection with that, then you, all the other things. It means you want to have sex, so then what kind of house you'd like to have sex in, what kind of furniture you would like to have sex on, what kind of arrangements would you like to have people, you know, that they can come and see the place where you have sex, and they can also see the byproducts of your sex, meaning the car. And then you have to drive around and show what you have sex with, so you have to have a nice car. Then you go out to places, you know, so you can even better show off what you have sex with. You know, you go to the clubs and other programs like this. So basically, it all just one after another. Though this is not necessarily understood, but this is what's going on. Once Srila Prabhupada was at one Indian gentleman's house, and after the meal and all that, they just had prasad and all. Then he was introducing all his family members. And after introducing his wife, then he went through all his 10 kids. And so at the end of it, then Prabhupada turned to one of the sannyasis there and said, you know, he's very proud of, you know, how much sex he's had and showing all his kids and all this kind of thing. Though the man will just think it is natural social interaction, because what else do you have in the world of sex than that's all there is. You know, you can show them around your house, you can show them your family, you can offer them facilities, this and that. So it's a natural position. So all this illusion then is created around this central point. Because we see that those who are not interested in sex, those on Satya Tapa and I think Jana Loka, then they don't have houses, they just live out in the forest. They don't have any of these things. Though they are nicely situated, they are well above, they are very austere, very powerful, they have all mystic cities. You know, they perform their yajnas, they see the Lord, and all, but they have nothing. They do their meditation, they perform their austerities. So all this, but we see Indra, who is the top of those in this world who is interested in sex, then he has the biggest palace, the biggest arrangement, the best apsaras, the best musicians, the best dress, the best this, the best that, everything the best. You can't get better than him on, you know, the general material platform. So then we can understand all this goes along with those. So all of our security, this, that, so many things, then it's all connected. The secure what? Secure our sex life. Secure the results of that sex life. So that is the element that is being brought out, is that the living entity creates this illusion around them, that this is all very important, very, very necessary for them. So then we can see here is that now that Lord Shiva was over this illusion, the lust had dissipated, so therefore then he could understand what was the position, that he had been victimized by Krishna's potency. And so then understanding this, then he came back to, you know, his senses and didn't get involved in any more Maya, because the girl was not something for him to enjoy, and, you know, that whole attraction and all that was created by the illusory potency. So then he could understand the position. So then Prabhupada points out, so in the Vedic culture then the brahmacharya is trained to protect the saman, to understand what is the importance of the saman. And then in that position, then they're very, very careful, because they don't want to lose the semen. They want to keep it. So therefore, they don't become victimized by the material energy. Because if they see a beautiful woman, then the natural thing is, as someone who wants to be victimized, then here's something you can be victimized with. You know, it's automatic. So therefore, then they very much take part in the illusory proceedings that the material energy will create. But if that's not their purpose, they don't want to lose semen, so therefore, then they will not get involved. Because getting involved by looking and contemplating, then you become attached. And when there's attachment, then naturally then this lust increases, and then one has to satisfy this lust. And then from satisfying that lust, then children are produced, and from that, then everything else is necessary. You need all other facilities are required. So therefore, then, if there's the proper education of what is sex life, what it's for the creation of children, then it completely changes one's whole view of this material world. Instead of being a nice place to be in, then it is not necessarily such a nice place. One is here. One doesn't have any alternative until one comes to the perfectional platform. But while one is here, then one understands properly what is the position of this material energy, and then he will engage in the activities, you know, in his duties within this world, with the purpose of understanding Krishna, about with being situated as Krishna's servant. Then whatever his position is, whether he is a brahmachari, whether he's grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, then he understands that the material energy itself has nothing to offer. But since we're here, it is the activities that can be performed here, the facilities that can be used here, then those are engaged all in the Lord's service. So for him, the focus is engaging in the Lord's service, not creating an artificial idea that whatever is here is actually of value or use. It's not. It's only value or use if it can be connected to the Lord. It's service in connection to the Lord. That is what is the value. If you can make the family Krishna conscious, you can use your money for Krishna conscious purposes, your house can be engaged for becoming Krishna conscious or helping others become Krishna conscious, then it has meaning. Otherwise, it has no meaning. It's illusion. It's an illusion. So this is the principle that is given here. Any questions on this? Text 36. Thus Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not at all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Vishnu had acted upon him. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as all-powerful because no one can excel him in any activity. In Bhagavad Gita 7.7, the Lord says, Mata mata parataram nanyat kinchirasti dananjaya. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. No one can equal the Lord or be greater than him, for he is the master of everyone. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila 5.142, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasabhritya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the only master of everyone, including even Lord Shiva. What to speak of others? Lord Shiva was already aware of the supreme power of Lord Vishnu, but when he was actually put into bewilderment, he felt proud to have such an exalted master. So here Lord Shiva then is able to understand his position as subservient to Lord Vishnu. This is the position. Otherwise he is Lord of the material energy, so he knows that Krishna is the Lord. He is not an illusion because he's an expansion of the Lord. But then here, then he understands very fully by direct experience Krishna's potency, Krishna's position. Because up to now, as he has his area, and Vishnu is working in that, and he is serving Vishnu, and so it is nice, but he has never been overpowered by the Lord's potency. So therefore, he now has, in that experience, is then able to appreciate. So he can see how powerful the Lord is, so he appreciates that, and he is feeling happy that, you know, just to see the position of his Lord is so exalted that Lord Shiva, who cannot be bewildered by the material energy, it can be bewildered by the Lord. So the living entity also, in seeing the power of Maya, then can appreciate the power of Krishna. And this is just a portion. This is just a fraction of his potency. The spiritual arrangement, the spiritual potency, then it's very, very great. So that is great. And then here is just a fraction of that. So we are able to be bewildered so much by this potency. So one can imagine how great is the spiritual potency. So Lord Shiva then is appreciating this. You know, that Krishna says there's no one superior to him, and that has been amply proved at this point, because within the material sphere, then Shiva is the greatest of all living entities. So if he can be bewildered, then that establishes Vishnu solely as supreme. You know, it's not even just that they're kind of like a little close. It is just so vast a difference that someone who's never bewildered can be so bewildered. You know, it's not even just a little bewildered. You know, it's like Mohini Murti came and Shiva looked and thought, quite attractive, you know, quite attractive. You know, and he turns to his wife and goes, she's pretty beautiful, isn't she? You know, no, he completely forgot everything, goes running off after this girl, you know, in front of his wife, in front of his associates, in front of all the sages and all that. He went running through all their ashrams. So you can imagine that, you know, the sage is sitting there in his ashram. Suddenly this naked girl comes running through the ashram. But the sages aren't even noticing the naked girl. What's amazing? I mean, girls, you know, may be naked or not. That's one thing. They take their bath, they may be naked. That's not the big deal. The big deal is that Lord Shiva is running behind this naked girl. Now that's something. So then all of them, they're all noticing that Shiva's going by, you know. And he went through all places, you know, all different mountains and rivers and all, wherever the sages were. So it wasn't just one or two. He must have gone through many, 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 many ashrams. Because Shiva is very powerful. He can move the speed of mind, and then Mohini Murti would also be moving. So I'm sure they would, Mohini would slow down just for a moment going through the ashram and then go on to the next one. Just so that all the sages could see. So what a embarrassing situation. But he is not actually embarrassed, because he knows it's the potency of the Lord. The Lord has created this, so it's not actually, he himself is not to be embarrassed. You know, like that. So that is a, he just is appreciating the potency of Krishna. You know, he had asked to see this form, and Krishna said, okay. You want to see? Yes, no problem. You know, like this. Any questions on this? Yeah.
Was it
Yogamaya
potency?
Yeah, the form was Yogamaya. So it was, he was using internal potency, but in the way of the external potency. Because the internal potency is very beautiful, but it's not trying to attract and enjoy. So therefore it doesn't create material lust. But the external potency does. So therefore he used his internal potency in the method of the external. Like that. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So therefore then it bewildered, because otherwise the internal potency doesn't do this. You know, it can't be used for anyone else, to attract anyone else other than Krishna. So the internal potency, used as internal potency, attracts Krishna. Because it's being used means it's bhakti. So the internal potency here is being used as the external to attract attention. Yeah. Because it means the living entity here is doing their activities with the idea to attract the opposite sex. If they're not just doing it in a pure way just because that's the way they do it. You'll see that in little kids. But they still try to attract attention. Little kids do stuff and all that. You see they're on their own. But you know, if they do it to attract attention. Like that. You know, when kids are being cute, it's because they're getting attention. Like that. You know, so they've learned they can be cute and get attention. But if they're cute and don't get attention, then they become nasty, and then they definitely get attention. Like that. So the point is the living entity here wants to get attention. But in the spiritual world, they're not wanting to get attention. They're wanting to give attention. So it's a very completely different paradigm. Like that. So this pastime is to prove that Krishna is superior to Vishnu, and that everybody has to be very careful about the bewildering potency of the material energy. Yes?
Alright, so when a child does something for attention, but it's not based on sex, the core reason for that attraction. That happens because the subtle body travels with the soul, so that tendency is still there to want to be the enjoyer.
Yeah, yeah.
But means the gross body can't manifest it.
Yeah, yeah. The gross body doesn't manifest it. It means when the gross body can, then it has all the mechanisms in place. So therefore, the child would do the same thing before, but there were no hormones working. So then it comes off as innocent. You know? But when they get older, the hormones work, then there isn't innocence. So they start connecting. But before, they don't connect. It means a small child can walk into a room with naked women, and you know, it doesn't mean anything to them. You know, it's like that. But if they're bigger and they do that because of the hormones, then they have a different, they're attracted.
So the hormones, the chemicals belong to the gross body.
Yeah, they belong to the gross body. But the living entity wants to enjoy in that way. Therefore, they're put into this situation. If they didn't want, then they wouldn't be in that position. That's the whole point. So it's not the subtle body that carries, the subtle body carries specific desires. It's the soul's contaminated consciousness carries the actual desire. I want to enjoy in the material world. So then, of that means whatever the material world has to offer, that's what I want to enjoy. So now, you know, so that's the broad scope. But the mind then chooses, according to the particular conditioning one is in, which particular things they want to enjoy. They want to enjoy women, they don't want to enjoy women, they want to enjoy sports, so they want to enjoy something else. The mind will choose, you know, and if it's women, which women, you know, if it's sports, which sports, if it's adventure, what adventure, you know, if it's wealth, and what kind of wealth, you know, so like this, then it chooses specifics, you know, and it gets finer and finer within that, you know. Okay?
Yeah.
Maharaj, could it be said that this sex desire that's there in the material plane is actually also used for sort of control some of the demoniac tendencies in a way, like in the previous pastime, Nanyamurti told them they sit down quietly, they will get the sex later. But similarly, in the material world, it seems like even very rough personalities, because of this strong will, suddenly settle down and make family somehow, despite their really, domestic tendencies. Otherwise, they seem to change just for that desire.
Yeah, yeah. It means generally you said you have that. I mean, you have those who are rough in all spheres, but you have those who are. Yeah, it means they're rough, but they may not be so rough in connection with women. They're rough with everybody else, but they're not so rough with the women. Or they may be a little rough with the women, but they're very kind to their children. They'll never be rough with their children. You know, or you get those that are rough with everybody. Like that. But it is the whole purpose. People are rough. Why are they rough? Because they want something. So even if it's not connected with women, still material energy is feminine. So it's still the same principle. Just another aspect of it, a different level of it. And wanting to enjoy the material energy means that the male is trying to exploit the female. Like that. So that's every living entity, even the bug and anything. You know, it's coming in eating the wooden post, you know, because to them the wooden post is enjoyable, you know, so therefore they, in that masculine identity, then eat your post and think that they are, you know, controlling and getting what they want. So that's just the way the material energy is. That's the problem here, there's the mood to control and enjoy, while the actual position of the living entity is to serve. That's the actual nature. So if one accepts that nature here, then this nature also works properly, because it is an energy of the Lord. The external potency is one of Krishna's eternal potency. So it's always there. So the jiva, if they want to act properly, that is the jiva, then they will also be in a mood of service. Then therefore they're functioning and moving in the material world, then it has no problem. It doesn't create any difficulty for them. There's no anxiety for them. And they give no anxiety to others. You know, if someone else wants to, of their own, create anxiety, but there's no cause from the side of the person. Yudhishthir, there's nothing Yudhishthir ever did once that should create anxiety on the part of Duryodhana. But Duryodhana, because of his improper material desires, his actual, his sinful tendencies, therefore he saw Yudhishthira Maharaj as an opponent. But otherwise, if Duryodhana had been, properly situated, then Yudhishthira is the elder brother. So he would have been king, and he would have been one of his major players, as the eldest of all his brothers. And Bhima, they would have been, like their main ministers, advisors, maybe even the generals, would have been Drona, it means Drona would have been the Acharya. Bhishma was the protector, Kripa was their Acharya, and your generals of your army would have been Bhima, Duryodhana, like this, Arjuna, it would have been great. But it wasn't. He didn't have that. He created that he had to be the king. So therefore, then Yudhishthira becomes an obstacle, but there's nothing that Yudhishthira did. So then, in that way, then the devotee, if they act properly, they have that mood of service, then whatever they do will not create any anxiety for themselves, And if the other purpose is properly, situated, it won't create any problem for them either. But if they don't, then that you can expect that in the material world there's going to be problems, just the way the place is designed, Just like you design things nowadays, so they already have their, planned obsolescence. This will go for a certain amount of time, then break, and by that time they'll have a new model, so naturally you want to buy the new model. So this place is programmed that it will have planned problems, right? So then all this is created.
Maharaj, could it be said that the planned problem, as you put it, is also a perfection in that it ensures that the living entity doesn't think that this is its place to stay?
Yeah, of course. Like that. Means he would get, that's what it's for. Because it's so that the living entity understands that he doesn't match. But it's not that those problems have to be created. Doesn't have to be created. It means material energy is an eternal principle, but it's temporarily manifested. That's the nature of it. So the soul in contact with it, even if Maya is not trying to create a problem for you due to your past karma, even if it's trying to make everything wonderful, still, you are going to die. That's all. The feminine nature is its nature, the masculine nature is different, things that we have are temporary, all these things. So therefore, there's going to be a problem. Even if it's perfect, still you're going to die. So there's going to be at some point some problem. Even if the person is the most pious, has all the most pious facilities, he will still see that there's something missing. Some shortage is there, and then he dies anyway. So therefore, it won't work. You can't put the living entity, the jiva, and the external energy together and expect there'll be satisfaction. Even in the most wonderful situation. So it's just the way it is. But because then the living entity has a tendency to not behave properly, then therefore all these other wonderful situations are unnecessarily created, by himself, that gives himself so much misery. There'll be misery anyway. But he compounds that by his improper behavior. Anything else?
Question about sense control. To be revealed that you have to lose the memory, and sometimes devotees, they achieve, they go through the different levels of sense control, and they come to the level when they actually aware that it's not beneficial for them. They in full memory, they know philosophy enough, forgetting at that particular moment, and still they cannot restrain their senses.
how they can move further from this.
It's more practice. See, the thing is by intelligence you can control the mind, but the purpose is not to control the mind by intelligence. The purpose that you're trying to get to is to change the desires of the mind. That's all. So using the intelligence is a tool to change the desire. Because ultimately you have to change the desire to I am servant of Krishna, I simply want to please Krishna. So technically, see, memory is part of the intelligence, not the mind. The mind accesses it only for the purpose to find out if this situation, how to make a decision to accept it or reject it, is it good or bad. So then, if the mind is on a more, you know, proper level, then it remembers. But if the mind has already made the choice that it wants the sense object, it doesn't bother with the memory anymore. Because the memory is only to use to make a decision. But if it's made the decision, there's no need of the memory. Only the intelligence then will bring up the point. But if it's been overwhelmed by the mind, then one is not going to listen to the intelligence anyway. Like that. So that's the point is of it, because the mind is the source seat of your happiness. Therefore, that is what needs to be changed, transformed. It's the desires of the mind, like that. Mind, you can't change how it works. Intelligence, you can't change. You can't change what senses you have and what body you have, like that. But you can change what is the desires of the mind. You know, how to use those desires. First, that's the thing, is those desires are there, but they will be used for Krishna. And the next stage is that you change the purpose of desire. You know, what is your actual desire? You may not change the externals, what activities you're doing, but you'll change the whole purpose of your doing those things. You know, first you'll dovetail them, then you'll take it further to do it for the Lord's happiness rather than our happiness. So you completely switch it around. Though it's still a dovetailed activity. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes.
The Paramatma is then guiding the intelligence of the mind, obviously.
Yeah, Paramatma is there, he's always guiding, but generally we have a tendency to always not be listening. So, you know, he's. You know, one has to appreciate the care that even though for the last unlimited lifetimes we've never listened, he's still telling us what to do. You know? Like that. So if you can work on that principle, then it's good. You know, as Monkey Bihari was saying yesterday, you should tell the person, you know, but then you have to decide on whether the concomitant reaction is worth it. But, you know, if you're willing to tolerate all that, then that's a good position. It's very kind, you know. But if showing that kindness, you only get so much trouble, then it may not be seen to be worth it, right? Because you have another purpose, to go back to Godhead. Well, here, Krishna's so by not telling, it may or may not have an effect upon your going back to Godhead. But here, Krishna's always telling us what to do, because, all right, we should be coming back to Godhead. So in any case, we're supposed to be coming to him, so his instruction is always, it will always create auspiciousness, like that. Well, our instruction to someone else may create auspiciousness if they take it. It's an auspicious instruction, but if they take it, then it will create auspiciousness. But if they don't take it, it may create inauspiciousness. Like that. Though, you know, the service done for Krishna is always there.
Maharaj, that point was just brought up. So if someone has a good intention to tell somebody something, then, and as you said, it might be taken or it might not be taken. So how do we relate that according to scripture? So can we say that Krishna has instructed us that if it's our duty, then we have to do it, but if it's not our duty, and even if we can do it well, we don't do it. So how does that relate to it?
I mean, point is that if the person is our dependent, so it's our duty to make them Krishna conscious. So therefore we try the best we can to do it. But if it comes to the point it can't, then we may make some adjustments in it. But it has to be, you know, thoroughly proven that there's no value. Then, but if they're not our dependent, then you have to see whether it is proper for us to instruct them or not, because it's not our service. Like that. If it's a matter of it would be taken and accepted, then it's a nice thing. Then as a friend or a well-wisher or, you know, whatever's one's relationship, then one can speak. But if it will not be taken properly, then it's not enjoined that we should be the one telling them. Then we go to someone who would be their authority, who would have the right to say something. Like that. Otherwise, then, and this we're talking about all is that what we're just going, this discussion is working on the principle of what we're saying is correct, and our motive for saying it is correct. We're not talking about if we have a wrong understanding, you know, or our motive is wrong. We're not even discussing that, because that will always create a problem. Even if the person does accept it, it will create something will be created, either for that person or for ourselves.
But would it imply that Krishna gives us these sort of guidelines so that, because I knew a friend who used to say like this and telling me, I'm saying it because I'm being a good person. But actually, later on, after mixing with the person for some time, I realized it was just a case of she couldn't control her tongue. She had to say it because that gave her
authority.
Yeah.
Authority. And that's what I'm saying is that you have to see. So if you say something, they don't take it, the first thing to then to check is what you're saying, is it correct? Maybe it is or not. If you do know that field, and it is by your experience correct, and all that, then you look at, well, is my attitude right? And if you see that according to tradition and etiquette is correct, then generally you would understand that therefore don't address that person in this way, because they're not in a position to reciprocate, because relationship has to be reciprocated. If it's not reciprocated, it's not a relationship. So therefore you understand, at least in this field or area, you don't have a relationship with the person. So therefore better not to address it, unless you can create that relationship. If somehow or another you can be accepted as, you know, someone who knows this field, you know, by some way or another, either by speech or you're doing it, you know, then the next day when they're in the kitchen washing the dishes or, you know, doing something in the kitchen and you're the one sitting there and you're cooking perfect chapatis, then they'll notice, and then maybe the next day you can tell them, or they'll come up to you and say, oh, how'd you do that? You know, you have to establish your authority, you know. Then you can, like that. But just to manage, but or just to establish it by saying that yes, this, that, it may or may not be correct. You know, it may be, or it, even if it is correct, you're in that position. But that you have to establish it. You have to see what is your motive behind it. Is it to actually help the person, or is it for your own? You want to be the authority. See, it's like, do you want to be the authority, or do you have the natural nature that you are the authority? You have the nature, like Yudhishthira has the conditioned nature of authority. Therefore, it is his duty to use that nature in Krishna's service. So the best way to do that is as a king. And he has the ability to not only be king, but to be emperor. So therefore, to not be emperor for Krishna would not be fully engaging his nature in Krishna's service. But when the facility's not there, he's happy to sit in the forest under a tree. Like that. Because that's just the way it's been arranged. He's not Bhima, Draupadi, they're complaining, you know, how come we're out here in the forest, you know, we could have killed them at that time, we would have sort of fallen. No, Yudhishthira's, no. This is just the way it's been. We're following our religious principles, and it's landed us in the forest. Like that. We shouldn't use inappropriate methods to gain whatever we want. That is not proper. You know, that is not how we should do. Duryodhana may do that. He will get some gains, but because it's gotten due to, you know, illicit methods, he will lose it. And we, you know, for whatever reason, the Lord's plan or for our previous whatever we've done wrong, therefore we're here in the forest. Who knows what we've done in other lifetimes and everything like that. Seems that we have.
Maharaj, I just want to make it clear for one moment. Assuming that one thing said is going to be correct, and that is, you know, it's not out of some other funny motivation, it's correct motivation. My understanding is you should speak, giving someone instruction if it's your duty, if they ask, or if you have a rapport with them. Mm-hmm. Would that be correct to say that?
Yeah, basically. Like that. You know, so then yeah, like that. Because that's we see in Bhagavad Gita, austerity of the speech. That means it's, you know, appropriate speech in a pleasant way in the proper forum. Like that. So technically, it should be a proper forum. You know, it should be that you have a community that is close enough that different persons can say different things, and what they're saying is proper, and then it's not for some particular purpose, you know, their own personal purpose. But in case it's not, or you have an individual who hasn't come to that platform yet, or that standard yet, then therefore you may have to adjust, you know.
Just further on that, it's often difficult with such a movement as ours, where we've got new uncultured people all the time. So unless proper etiquette is often taught, they're used to saying whatever comes to mind at any time, often very inappropriately. So while, you know, devotees are tolerant, it seems to me that the etiquette needs to be taught simply so everything, no one's feathers are ruffled, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, it's etiquette must be taught. That's a natural thing. And then one should see, you know. So it's not just everybody. It's not even just new untrained person. Also, old untrained persons. Also, untrained is untrained. You know, just it has different manifestations, like that. And you know, it's that. And then you have to see the, you know, what are the particular uniqueness of the environment in which it's in. You know, like here, people just say things very, very openly. America, they'll say it pretty openly if they're confident. But in England, they won't say anything. So there they won't have that problem. They'll have another problem. You know, so you have to see what's the problem of the place. And then, you know, work on those just to teach people and all that. It's always good. But the point is you can only teach people who want to learn. That's also a point. That is there. Yeah.
Is there any connection between the self-deceit and motive passion?
Self-deceit is motive ignorance. Motive passion means you want to get something. Motive ignorance is you're proud of something connected to the material energy. You know, and so because of that, that means it's illusion. You don't actually understand it for what it is. So maybe due to ignorance you want something, but that endeavor for it is passion. You know, that due to ignorance you think you're, you know, very qualified or, you know, whatever it may be, and because of that, therefore you want this. So that desire for that, that endeavor for it is passion, though maybe founded on ignorance. Like that. So when we're pride and proud, you can see in the third canto, Kapila Muni, that describes devotional service mixed with the modes. So someone who's proud of their position, their education, their, you know, their background, anything of what they have from previous, you know, life, and they are a separatist, means they have their own idea, own plan. It's not, you know, Krishna's plan is one thing, their plan is another. Such a person then is said to be in ignorance. So that their position is weak. They're not such good association. Those in the mode of passion, then they serve the deity, pray to the deity for material things. So their worship of the deity is to get a material result. And those in the mode of goodness, mixed with goodness, then they have the you know, still attachment for impersonalism or attachment to not having any material problems, no material anxieties like that, because that's what impersonalism is, material world's anxiety, therefore I want to be in a position where there's no anxiety like that. And then pure platform is that we want to please Krishna. We don't have any desires for any results of karma and jnana, and we're not in illusion about our position. We're humble. We know that we're servant of the Lord. Like that. So that's, so you can see the details there.
What if a devotee, sometimes he acts out of compassion, but in reality it's another attachment in disguise of compassion. Is that example of
see, it all depends on whether it's being, if it's their position. It means like the husband is naturally kind to the wife and the children. What is their needs he's providing. But, you know, the bottom line is because he's attached to the whole process. Right? So that is there. But if he is doing according to the religious principles, then that's considered pious. Though, of course, a mode of passion is there, ignorance is there. Both have to be there. You know. So then that's why those two are always put together, and then goodness is kept as a separate thing. You don't hear of generally them on their own. They're generally they're a pair, right? Because the body's ignorance. Attachment to the body is ignorance. Endeavoring to fulfill the needs and desires of the body, that's passion. Like that. So that's there. So, but if it's according to the religious principles, you know, then it's considered pious. But if you connect that to Krishna, it's, you're following that because it's pleasing to Krishna, then it becomes devotional. Like that. So those other points are overlooked because those would be the small points.
Compassion.
You have to show what is the standard by which you're making that choice. How do you tell whether it's compassion or whether it's not? It means you're observing it and you have concluded that it's not. By what considerations did you come to that conclusion? Understand? It means you had to work on something to decide, because you have to decide that it's good or bad. So how did you decide that it was not good? It was below the standard.
Just to, for example, compromising first principle.
Okay. So now you're
out of compassion, I think I don't want.
No. I understand that. That's not the question. We're talking now back from that. So now, who has established those principles? Okay, and where did Prabhupada get them from? Yeah, from the scriptures, from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So therefore, based on the scriptures, then we look at it, then we can see that there's a problem. If it's just our own mind, then what is the difference between our opinion and their opinion? You know? But if it's based on the scriptures, then it has. So then it's a matter of educating them in the standards. It's not just pointing out that they're wrong. You have to educate them why it's wrong and what is the standard by which you can make a decision. Then they know how to act. Someone who's, if they're acting not according to the scriptures, means it's out of ignorance. But once they understand and they value that principle of the scriptures, then they will do their best to try to follow that. So that's, one has to see is that the point is that the connection to Krishna, that's what makes it useful. That's what makes it good. You know, for us, it's not just enough that it's according to scripture. It's according to scriptures that bring it closer to Krishna. Scripture also tells us how to get to the heavenly planet. So according to that principle, we're not applying it in our life. We're applying what is useful that gets us towards Krishna. Like that. So then you have your standard, and then you help others understand that. Then that's good. Otherwise, then how do you correct their misunderstanding?
because they know principle, they have been trained, they were following him for some time. But then by the power of self delusion, they twist in it in such a way that, oh, for the sake of others, I can sacrifice. That's it, that's an essential.
Yeah, but then do you have? But how do you? How then? We're not, the discussion's not the principle. The principle is not the discussion here. So what's the actual discussion? The four legged principles aren't the discussion in this case. It's something else.
How can break itself? So
that's another thing. But what is the self delusion?
In that particular case, that they think they acting on compassion.
It's there.
To justify, they don't need that for themselves. And in that way, they hope that they will.
Yeah, but that's what they're trying to affect. Their goal is to affect that they're using a method. It means you have a goal you want to get, you use a method. So, what is their method? Is then they're engaging in sense gratification. Well, what's the principle on which they consider themselves able to engage in that sense gratification? Means, you understand? Means, how do they feel? It means everybody else has to follow it, otherwise they will not progress toward going back to Godhead. We're trying to hold the family together. Why would we hold the family together? Just for kicks, or because it's supposed to be a Krishna conscious entity? It's for the purpose of forwarding our Krishna conscious experience. So that we want to become Krishna conscious, the methods we use are not Krishna conscious. And how do we feel that we are in a position to avoid Krishna consciousness? So what does that make us? You have God, the material energy, in us. So how does that place us that we could use those methods and not be affected? What would we have to consider ourselves?
Above it, yes.
That's the point. We would have to be above it. We would have to be, we're not conditioned, we're not affected by it, we're more powerful like that, so therefore we can use it. That's the self-delusion. The self-deception is not trying to be compassionate, kind. That's just the natural things of interaction and other things like that. That's a symptom. But the real root is that they think that they are above the effect of it. They think, I can do these things, break the regular principles, and not be, my spiritual life will not be compromised. Or then that's an illusion about themselves, their position as Jiva. Well, we just have seen here by the pastime of Lord Shiva that even Shiva's, if the Lord wants us, not beyond. So therefore we should never, if he can be affected, we should never think that we won't be affected. Then, yeah, so then, and the other point is if they really think that it's worth it, and they understand that it will compromise Krishna consciousness, then you have to just check and see if they understand, that's not themselves, but Krishna's position, our relationship with him. Are we Krishna's servant? You know, what is the position of material energy? Material energy is inferior. So is it worth compromising superior, that relationship with Krishna, for an illusory relationship with the material energy? You know? So therefore we see is that their understanding of the philosophy is wrong. Therefore these things could happen. You know, they may say, well, I've thought it out and all this, but if you start a mathematical equation and the first calculation is wrong, even though every other calculation is correct, your conclusion will be wrong. It has to be. So they have to see is that all the elements are in place. That's the meaning of sambandha gyan. You have to understand what is a living entity, what is God, and what's a material energy. You know. So therefore, the illusory needs of this world that are a temporary thing that happen to be what is the state of our mind at today, which actually have nothing to do with the actual nature of the soul, is we deal with them because it's the reality of where our mind is at this point. But we don't compromise the spiritual for that. we find out how to engage that in Krishna's service. Because Krishna is big. Our particular desire, that's what's small. That's a detail. Serving Krishna is the principle. Therefore, the principle can always be applied. The detail may or may not be always able to be applied. You may have to use a different detail in a different situation. So therefore, we have to see is how to connect. Krishna can always be connected to anything like that. So that then we have to see how to do that. And if that means we have to make some adjustment or find another method. Why is it that breaking the four other principles is the only way to hold a family together? You know, I mean, it doesn't, you know, you're going to have, you know, how are you going to hold it together with your family? You know, with all the, okay, maybe that, you know, that's one thing, a wife or a husband, but, you know, how does that hold it together for your daughter or your son or your dog or your parakeet or, you know, I mean, how does that hold that together? You know, so I'm saying is, you may have to find another method. There's more ways of showing kindness and interacting between a husband and wife than breaking the four other principles. Like that. If you only married the body, then yes. Then that's definitely maybe a serious consideration. But the body has more things that you could show kindness towards. It means if you have sex with the body but don't feed it, or don't clothe it, or don't give medicine, or don't give shelter, you know, so there's a lot more involved there. So why that's the only solution? So it's not well thought out, you know. So it may say, well, you know, there's reality, but reality, what is reality? What is this definition? What is reality? You know, reality is not so.
It seems that many devotees will criticizing others on the basis of the same sort of feeling that they above this offense.
No, it's nobody's above. This is why this pastime is here, to show that nobody's above. That's the point. If one is involved in sexual activities that are legal, means to create children, and that is according to the principles as given by Krishna, one then will become, that endeavor will free you from that attachment. But if one is not, it will only bind you. It doesn't matter who you are or who you think you are. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no alternative. It binds everybody. So there's no. It doesn't matter, you know, what we think or what our philosophy. The reality is, it's material energy, and she works that way. She doesn't change the way she works as we think it's different. It's not like that. You know, we may think whatever we like. But then reality is established by Krishna. Reality, Krishna is reality. So therefore, how he establishes things, that is the reality. You know, we may have our perception on the reality, but we have to see, is that perception coming through goodness or through passion and ignorance? If it's coming through goodness, it's based on the scripture, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we have then it's something we can work with. It's as close as we'll get. Like that, as long as it's, you know, the devotional content is there. But if passion and ignorance is there, then it's not reality. It's a kind of reality. You know, just like when the devotees walk by, the dogs think they're funny, so they bark. Of course, it's a reality. But is that the reality we want to identify ourselves with? A dog's reality, or a skunk's reality, or, you know, a worm or a bug's reality, or, you know, whose reality we want to. They're all realities. But if we want a human reality, and of that a cultured human reality, and of that a Krishna conscious human reality, then that's something else. Unlimited realities that we have to define which reality we want. You know, attachment's not enough. Attachment is not enough to make a family work. You have to have knowledge. You have to be trained. You have to know what you're doing. You know, otherwise you see, the father has the baby starts crying and all that. He's attached to the baby. He would like to do something for a baby. He wouldn't know beans what to do for that baby. He doesn't know if it's tired, if it's hungry, you know, if it's, you know, needs a change of its diapers, there's a bug bothering it, it's got some, you know, skin problem, he wouldn't have a clue what it is. But the mother can tell. She has knowledge, she has training. Therefore, she takes the baby and does something with it. So attachment is never enough. In this modern age, it's all you need. All the movies, all the books, it's just attachment. There's some bozo guy has no ability in anything, but then he rises to the occasion, you know, overcomes all obstacles, including the government, the biggest racket in the world, and even, whatever the national, police force can't overcome, and he gets through it all and gets out of there with whatever it is, his daughter, his wife, or, his car, whatever it was that he wants, he overcomes all obstacles, all because he was attached, that's all. So therefore, and then, he rides off into the sunset, and the music comes up, and the credits go on, and everybody's very happy. It was a great movie. But I mean, it's stupid. It doesn't work like that. You know, everybody's happy and wishes it worked like that. That's why we want people are stupid enough to, pay money and watch it. You know, I mean, you think, why is it? Why would constantly all these things come out? Why would movies be made? We're thinking it's for our benefit. No, it's because somebody, the producer, wants to make money. Right? That's the bottom line. The producer wants to make money. It's a business. He knows that people are foolish enough that they have these ideas. Therefore, he gets together actors who can portray that idea and, directors and other technicians who can actually make it convincing. Right? And then he markets it, and then he gets his money. That's it. And everybody else thinks that there's some serious theme here and something you can guide your life by and all this kind of stuff. Like that. It was just business. That's all. So attachment's not enough. That's the bottom line. You have to have training. Otherwise, animals go by attachment. And it works for them. Because they listen to the supersoul. Like that. And when the supersoul says bark, they bark. When it says bite, they bite. When it says have sex, they have sex. And so then their dog life goes on very smoothly. But human beings don't listen. So therefore they have to be trained. Like that. Otherwise you don't have human life. It falls short. And even you don't even have animal life. The animals are even better. An untrained human is worse than an animal. It means you have a trained human is the best. An animal is second, and an untrained human is third. Because he doesn't even act as good as an animal. At least an animal is consistent. You know that a dog, how it will behave. You know a dog's a dog, That's all. You know if you feed it, you have a friend for life. But an untrained human, you can feed it and they can stab you in the back. So a dog won't do that. So you know what it is. A cat, yes. But not a dog. But you know, okay, this is a cat. It looks like a cat. It's got whiskers and it's got, it does all the things that purrs. Dogs don't purr and this one meows. It doesn't bark. Okay, and it climbs trees. So we can decide this is a cat. So this, I know I can feed it. It may or may not like me. But I know that. So therefore, I'm happy. They're around. Great. And when they take off, then what can you do as a cat? But a human being, you expect them to behave as a human, and then when they behave as something else, then you're surprised. You want to say something? You had a point to it.
I have a question. In the subject of training and culture, human beings, natural way of dealing is varnasha, correct?
That is the broadest technical scope for someone who, has more material needs. Then it addresses the broadest form of material needs. While Pancharatra will address a limited scope means, and then the Bhagavat, a very limited scope.
My question is, Prabhupada wanted us to be trained in Varnashram, at least at to understand our principles behind it, right? At the same time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he told the story of the gold stone pipe, and that, you know, Vaishnavas are gold, and to categorize Vaishnavas as Sudra, Brahmana, like that. He said that that's, they call it, you know, a gold stone pipe, you know, like stone pipe covered with gold. It's offensive. So how do we resolve the two? So, I don't, to me it seems like a contradiction, but no, it's not.
Means, let's say a devotee is a grihastha. Is he identified as a grihastha, or is he just a devotee who's performing the grihastha duties? Which is it?
A devotee.
Yes, so therefore, then if a devotee is performing brahminical duties, is he a Brahmin, or he's a devotee for his occupation? He does brahminical occupation. Just like if you say, this devotee, okay, he's a grihastha. How does he maintain himself? Oh, he does this work. What work? Oh, he, you know, works down at the restaurant. Okay, so then he works at the restaurant. So does that make him, you identify him, he's a cook or a cleaner? No, he's a devotee and he's doing those works. So therefore, the process can be followed, but we don't identify with it. I mean, the first thing is, do we identify with our conditioned nature? No, do we identify with it? Do we identify with the body, the gross or subtle body? Is that our identity?
No.
No. Okay. Now, does that gross or subtle body have a nature?
Yes.
Okay, so can we avoid that nature?
No.
So therefore, the particular varna or ashram that is suitable for it, is that us? Yeah, so that's the point. It's that it's done, but it's not one's identity. So therefore, when it comes to giving class, it's not that only the Brahmin Vaishnavas give class and Shudras don't. Who has realization, they give class. Right? That's who does it. You know, who's good at kirtan, they lead kirtan. You know, who's good at cooking, they cook. Right? The person may not be a cook. It may be the person who cooks in the restaurant every day, you know, is, you know, good for that. But the person for a feast, you may call in somebody else who only cooks at feasts. You know what I'm saying? They do something else. You know, they're a chartered accountant or something like that. But they know how to cook in big quantities and all that. So they like it. So for them, it's a hobby, according to conditioned nature. Cooking is their hobby. You know, so then they do it nicely because they like it. It's their hobby. Hobbies, you always do your best. Your official duties, your occupational duties, you may or may not do them nice, depending upon, you know, the situation of the consciousness of the living entity. So you may be the daily cook, but you're not so much into it. You're not inspired. But the person who cooks occasionally is inspired. Or it may be the other way around. The person who's so inspired, therefore he takes cooking every day, and every day he's trying to do all this. And the person who cooks occasionally, he doesn't have the experience, so he cooks what he knows. So it's you have to see the thing. So the whole idea is that it's a separate thing. We don't identify with it, so therefore we wouldn't call them that. It means that you'll notice an interesting point here. Is that brahmachari grihastha vanaprastha sannyas, you know, we just accept that. There's no discussion. Right? Nobody even questions that. Oh, he's a Brahmin, he wears sari, he's a brahmachari, he's wearing white, you know, he's a grihastha, they're sannyasis, or, you know, they're older persons, or they're vanaprasthas. And it's a very free talk. You can talk like that all day in any circle and all that. Bring in the varnas, bang, a wall goes up. You know, the Berlin Wall. Like that, you know. Oh, you know, we're not all these things. What's the bottom line? No one wants to be the shooter. That's it. That's the bottom line. That's all. Like that. If you remove shooter from the equation, then oh yes, we could talk about an ashram. You know. But no one minds. You know, but being the shooter, no. You know, no one will agree to that. Why? Because in the Western mentality, then in the hierarchy, you have to be on the top of the pile. That's all. You have to be on the top of the pile. Therefore, you couldn't handle it that you're on the bottom of the pile. Well, you find in other cultures that they have social stratas. For them, it's varnashram's not a problem at all. They'll say, yes, I'm this. You know, I work for somebody. I work at a job for somebody. I'm a shudra. You know, that's my job. It's a, by definition, you work for somebody. You're a shudra bus. That's all. You run the business. Others work for you. You're the vaishya. You know, you run the country, you're the kshatriya. You know, you're teaching, you're doing these, you're the Brahmin. It's very simple. They always say, how so complicated, varnashram? it's so simple, no one wants to deal with it because it's just so obvious. Within, you know, 15 seconds or 10 seconds, you can establish where you are in the varnashram system, and that's exactly what no one wants. Because then if I'm the shudra, then, you know, like this. You know. So that's the problem. But otherwise, the other is quite, is everyone wants the money, they're going to get it. They're already situated according to it. Maybe it's not scientific. That means the modern culture is running varnashram anyway, but it's not scientific. You have your students, you have your grihasthas, you have your retired people. Like that, you may not have many sannyasis, but whatever. Like that, you have the business class, you have the people working for them, you have the governments, you have the people working for them, you have the teachers, you have the people working for them. It's already there, but it's not scientific. Therefore, there's overlap, and it's not exactly. And so, the teachers are being run by an administrator, or the hospital, the doctors are being run by the administration, and you know. So you get all this topsy turviness like that. You know, you have the hired the guy who's the business consultant, you know, is Brahmin. You know, but the guy who's the professional business manager, he's a shudra. He went to the school, he got his business degree, he goes down to the business, gets a job, he's hired, he's a shudra. Though he's the guy that everybody sees and meets and all that, and he's doing a wheeling deal. You think he's the Vaishya. He's not the Vaishya. The Vaishya you don't even see. You never see the Vaishyas like that. You know, so it's already going on, but it's just, you know, what is glorious, what's not, you know, like the movie stars, the singers, this and that, are shudras, but they get very big publicity and everybody follows them. So that's an imbalance. Because of that, the whole society goes down. They should be following those who are cultured, the leaders of society. Like that. Just because the guy has an opinion and he has an attitude and he has a guitar, does that make it give him the right to, you know, control the society? You know, but whatever. But people buy into it. So, and the business guy, now why is that guy famous? Because there's a business guy behind him, you know, that runs the company, like that. They're just shudras. They'd be, you know, doing something on the street or, you know, going around looking, you know, can I sing in your place, you know. But somebody comes around, scouts them, sees these guys could make money and then, you know, makes them big. So it's, you know, therefore, that's why they need. But they stay in the back. They're smart. Businessmen are smart. You stay out of the way, no one notices you. Shudra likes to be in the front. You know, I got so much money, and I do this, and I do that. And how long does he have his money? Not very long. The businessman is in the back. He doesn't even talk that he has money. He walks around looking like the ordinary guy. The Internal Revenue walks right by him. And they go over to the shudra guy and take all his money. Right? They're smart. Money you keep by keeping it, you know, careful. Like that. So they don't talk about it, they don't show it, they don't do it. When they want, then they do something. Very controlled. It's not prestige. That they plan, they spend their money and all that. That's why they're in a higher position than the shudra. Like that. You know? So because they don't understand the balance. So the modern society is that, but they've put the shooters on the top. You know, your soccer stars, your sports things, this, that, because the mass of people are shooters, they can identify with the shooters. So therefore, you know, do. Leaders have to have good qualities, but they're not seeing good qualities in the leaders. So you distract them, okay, onto the shooters. You know, they have no good qualities, but nobody cares. As long as he can hit the ball, then who cares? You know, if the guy is, what is his, you know, what he does in his spare time. But a leader of society, what he does in his spare time, people care very much. So they distract. These are all planned. These aren't happening on their own. This is planned. That the artists and the sports people and all this, and the, that it's prominent in people's life and habit. This is arranged. This is discussions of people who run the countries. Or even more, it's the discussions of those who run the, who, not who runs the country here, who runs all the countries. You know, the big, you know, money guys. They planned, okay, we can't keep everybody by our method of business. Means you run these modern systems of paper money or electronic money, everybody can't be engaged. So therefore you're going to have a huge class of people who are unemployed. A few people will make a lot of money, so they'll taxed. And with that we'll maintain the ones that don't make the money. But at the same time, even they have money, they have to have something to do. So they're going to be in trouble. Right? So therefore, we have to arrange that they have something to distract their mind. So therefore, sports and all these different things, they distract people's minds. So you keep that happening and put it big, and then they're busy. And then somehow they can, like that. But it's still, even though it's still organized according to things, it's out of proportion. It's not systematic. And therefore Vaishyas do things they shouldn't be doing. Kshatriyas, you know, are doing things they shouldn't be doing. You know, they're making their revenue how they shouldn't. The government shouldn't make revenue off of sin. Right? It should make revenue off of good money. Sinful money should never be used like that. So they're doing it. So they're performing their duty. Government runs off of tax. That they're doing. Vices are running off of business. That they're doing. But the government is taking tax off of things it shouldn't, taking more tax than they should take. The vices are selling things they shouldn't be selling. You know, shooters you can't blame. They have to make a living. And the Brahmins are giving no direction or nobody cares for them. You know. They're just, it's their opinion, it's not any authorized opinion. So therefore, even though it's there, it's unscientific. So the Varnashram is simply how to scientifically put it. You know, okay, I'm doing, you know, Vaishya business, so I should sell things people need. You know, I shouldn't use unfair methods. Of course, I have to make profit, so I can't tell the people, yes, you know, I went to India and I bought this for, you know, 25 rupees, then, you know, my plane ticket and all this and that, and so all these things, and then the shop costs me this much, I pay this much rent. So therefore, actually in the overheads, by the volume I bought, you know, I bought this many pieces, so now this cost me 50 rupees. So therefore, this is what it cost me, so now, you know, whatever you like, you give me. It doesn't work like that. You just come in there and you say, this is, you know, 75 rupees, or this is 100 rupees. And then you may bargain with them if you like or not, or something like that. You can't tell them, you know, because the nature of business, no one will believe you anyway. You're a businessman. Why we should believe you it's 50? You're saying 50, it must be 20, you know. And he's saying, no, my cost price is 50. Like that, you know, like that. No, we can't believe you. I've watched it myself. I've seen one businessman to a friend, a personal, intimate friend, say, he says, how much should I pay? And he just told him, it cost me this much, you pay what you want, because I know you don't have much money. But realize that I have to make profit, so you should pay more than this. The guy didn't, he paid less than that. He just wouldn't believe him. And I saw, they argued for 45 minutes. He was just saying, I'm being honest, like that. No, you can't be honest. He says, you're my friend, I'm being honest. He just wouldn't accept. So businessman has to lie. But because it's in connection with the business, it's not considered lying. You know, it's not sinful. It's not a sinful lie. You know, just like the mother tells the child, ooh, she takes the medicine and tastes them, ooh, oh, so nice. Here, you take it. Like that. It's a flat out lie. The medicine tastes terrible. But it's not considered a lie. Like that. So therefore, it's it's, one has to understand what is nature and what can be done and what can't be. So the Vedas describe what you can do and what you can't do. What's truth, what's lie, what's proper, what's not, what's your duty, what's not your duty. Then if you just follow that, then you know. You know, okay, if I'm a Shudra, I work at the guy's place. Therefore, I should do my best that will benefit the company. That's a good Shudra. I'm taking that as my job, so I should do that. You know, but at the same time, I won't be exploited by the person. You know, so he tries to get more out of me with less money. No, it's just, you know, whatever it is. It is a business arrangement. But you're working. You go in there and do things and break things and, you know, do things that you shouldn't do and stuff like that. That would not be a proper Shudra. So therefore, you're religious. You want to make money by that. You're gaining by that. He's made the arrangement. It's his business. It's his organization. He's taken the headache. You're getting benefit. Therefore, you should work that it's beneficial. But you don't spend more time than is allotted. You have your 8 hours, you spend your 8 hours. And then the rest of the time you use for Krishna consciousness. But when you're there, you know what is a Shudra's job and you do it. Then you go home. Then you know what a husband's job is. You know, and you do that properly. Then you go to the temple. You know what a devotee's activities are. You know, and then you do some puja. You know what a pujari's duty is. Or you're a cook. You know what a cook's duty is. So that way Varnashraman establishes all these between Varnashram and the Pancharatra and the Bhagavat. Then we know clearly what is our duty in every situation. We do it. But we do it for Krishna. It's Krishna's system of Shudra, therefore I'm doing it being a good Shudra, because it's Krishna's system. Like that. Then life is peaceful. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Does that mean that somewhere in the balance being, say, doing the medical function of the temple and doing Shudra activity to support their family, that seem to be like in the modern society, everything's mixed up, as you say, because we also can't really keep them separate, so it's possible to do both without it being, to still be Varnashram.
Yeah, it means why. See, the thing is you have to understand that you have Varnashram, Pancharatra, and Bhagavat running all at the same time. If it was pure Varnashram, then the devotee who's doing the Shudra activity wouldn't be doing the puja. Right? Because Varnashram means you're doing the puja as your occupational duty, means that's how you're going to feed yourself. It's economics. Varna means economics. Ashram means your spiritual elevation. Right? So Varna means how you feed yourself, your economics. Like a brahmachari, he goes out begging. That's how he maintains himself. But it's not his what he begs. He gives that to the teacher and the teacher maintains him. But he's maintained because he begs. Like that. Or because he studies. Maybe the teacher has been given so many villages and he gets the revenue from that, so his students don't need to beg. They go out begging anyway for their own purification, their own humility. But he's a good student, so therefore if he's a good student, therefore he's maintained by the teacher. If he's not a good student, why the teacher will keep him? He's not a suitable student. So because he's a good student, he's self-controlled, he does menial service, he's submissive, you know, he works cooperatively, therefore then he is maintained in the ashram, like that. So we see it's that is his how he's maintained. So then grihastha then you have to consider, because brahmachari, vanaprastha and sannyas are based on the brahminical occupational duties. And the brahminical ashram and the brahminical occupational duties are not different. Like that. So therefore it's only the kshatriya can choose to perform kshatriya, vaishya, shudra vocational duties to maintain themselves. Otherwise the other three, they only perform brahminical activities. Like that. So that's just the position of how they make there. Now, the person who is performing an outside job, he's a hired person. He comes to the temple, he's doing puja not as an occupation, he's doing that as devotion towards the deity. Therefore, then he is the pancharatric system for him is not an occupation.
for him it's his devotional process, it's his ashram. Does that make sense? Now if you have a full-time pujari, and because they're full-time pujari, then the temple is giving them facility and all this and that, that is then person performing a brahminical occupation. But the point is anybody could do it. Anybody who is a second initiated devotee, then is automatically a Brahmin. So anybody could do it, but because of their conditioned nature, they may or may not be comfortable doing it. But theoretically, any second initiated devotee could then occupationally live as a Brahmin. So it's open to anybody. But because of their conditioned nature or because of their material desires, their attachments are more. Even you have two persons that one is means they both could do it. One chooses to do it, the other doesn't, because he doesn't just want a little flat here and there that's maybe his, maybe not. He wants to feel that if I own it, it's secure. But if I don't own it, then any time I can be on the street. Of course, a tornado could come and, you know, take his house and, you know, put it somewhere else. But you know, that's it's my house that they took, rather than, you know, it's by my, you know, whatever, I'm out on the street. I'm in control of I'm out on the street, rather than I'm not in control. You know, they tell me, okay, I'm sorry, we don't need your service anymore. You know, like that. Though you could come along and you didn't pay the mortgage, and then they come along and repossess your house. But somehow or another, there's the feeling of control here, while the other is not. So because you're in control, therefore you feel security, though nobody's in control, the material energy is in control. So whatever. So because of that, then they go out and they take up another job. They may take up, you know, shoot a job, Brahman, whatever they can find, whatever is akin to their nature, or whatever they can do and adjust with, then they do. So that's why for the devotees, what is the varna activity is not so important. But when it's going on, whoever's taking what position, that's the way it works. That's the way it works. That's how it functions. The temple president tells the other devotees what to do. They don't tell him what to do. He's not their shudra. You know? Modern is they try to create the modern scenario where you have a temple council. They make all the decisions, and the temple president simply carries it out. So he's not actually, it's not a kshatriya position. It's a shudra position. He is the hired manager for the council. You know, so then he's making the decision and taking the responsibility. But at the same time, because of the modern position, if he doesn't do well, he's at fault, not they're at fault. They put him in there. If something goes wrong, they say, well, he's not good, we now we're changing him. No, they should say, we're at fault because we put him there. But that much, how you say, you know, heart or, you know, human quality or, you know, how you say, virtue is not there, because that's why they create this. They don't have the power to do it, and the same time as they want the power, but they don't want the responsibility, so they hide behind that kind of so-called authority. So that's incorrect. Well, it means he makes the decisions like that. He may have senior devotees. Now, if there's senior devotees there, then he should take their advice if they give it. Same time as their advice stops at advice. If he does it or not, they can't get that out of shape. Because it's advice. Advice means it's voluntary and it's accepted voluntarily. So if he accepts it and does good, then the person giving the advice can't tell everyone, yeah, it was my idea, you know, they just take the credit. No, the credit has to go to the person who took it. So there's the detachment. That's why it's brahminical. Brahmins only can advise. Others can't, because they're attached to their advice. And if they want credit for their advice, means it's business. I gave the advice and I want the results. That's business. That's not a Brahmin. That's why it ends there. But if you feel that this person doesn't heed your advice, then you're independent to not give it. So therefore, Brahmins are independent, Kshatriyas are independent in this way. But the problem is we're not allowing everybody their independence. And neither are we understanding what is the limit of our independence. You know, it's like if everyone's independent, we're independent to do anything you want. And if we're restricted, everybody's restricted. So that's the problem with the modern, is that balance is not understood. Well, the Vedic says, here's your freedoms and here's your dependencies. Here's the restrictions. Brahman is free to go anywhere and do everything, but then he can't own anything. You know, the kid can go anywhere, walk into anybody's house, and nobody cares. You know, as long as he doesn't claim it's his or try to use the facility. You know, but he walks in and you offer the facility, then no problem. But if he comes in and demands the facility, then it's kind of like, hey, kid, beat it. You know. So you have to know where's the limit. So that's the problem, is the limits no one wants to accept. That would probably be another way, reason that probably Varnashram is, besides wanting to be the Shudra, is they don't like the limitation. I want to poke my nose everywhere. I want the facilities of all the four Varnas and Ashrams, but I don't want the restrictions of any of them. So that's you know, not an honest mentality. You know, that's not an honest mentality. So that's the difficulty. Okay. Yeah, this should be probably the last point.
Considering we talked about sex relations, how do you see the problem of the high rate of divorce in our movement, and how should we make moves to counteract such a common occurrence?
Main thing is that how you say, if there's a cooperative relationship or they feel an inspired relationship between husband and wife, then things work. And that can be established by knowing what is the duties, what a husband should do, what a wife should do. And also by both. So the wife is not expecting from the husband things that she shouldn't, or the husband from the wife things that he shouldn't. You know? Like this. Simple. I mean, it's a very big, big topic. But the basic thing is if the positions are understood. So therefore, you're not getting married because of love and all these things. That comes and goes. It's not a very strong foundation for a marriage. It's that the two persons feel that they can cooperate together in duty. Then that is the experience. So that's beyond these other things. Love is a, you know, it's not a strong element. It goes. A duty is. And if duty is done right, then, you know, like we were hearing yesterday, you know, the most people in this world, you know, religionists and that, they think a religious experience is spiritual, you know, because it's the biggest thing they've ever experienced. So that's what the Varnashram is trying to teach us, you know, is how the husband and wife can have such an experience. You know, the religionists are calling it spiritual, and we just call it normal family dealings. Normal human interrelationships. We don't attribute anything spiritual to it at all. If your purpose for doing it is for Krishna, then it gives spiritual benefit. But the experience itself is not. It's simply, you know, proper, you know, a proper pious emotional experience. So that cooperation, that they have more, they have, you know, there's a purpose. What is the purpose to marry? Somebody gets married, why? You know, many people might be, you know, fall short to give an answer. Or they may have an answer, but does the other party know that? You know, the girl is getting married, why? Because she can't stand living in the Brahmacharini ashram anymore. You know, okay, does the husband know that? That's the only reason. Oh, his duty is to provide a place for her to live so she can do whatever she wants. She's doing whatever she wants, basically, you know, within certain limits in the ashram. So now she just wants to be out of that ashram, so the husband provides that, and great. You know, so in the ashram, she doesn't cook, she doesn't do this, she doesn't do that. You know, only when there's some duties, she does. It's shared. So now in that house, then she's expecting the same thing. So, but did the husband know that? You know, so therefore, they have to know what it is that the other one wants.
The expectations are in the mirror.
Yes, but the problem is the nature of attraction between men and women. It makes it practically impossible to do. Because as soon as man comes in contact with women, then there's this created this environment that everything's going to be perfect eternally. You know? How do you know? Because it's so fun just sitting on the bench. Right? Right? Grihastha life just means sitting 24 hours sitting on a bench, right? And just kind of like now and again, you know, kind of looking at each other and sometimes smiling or giggling a little bit, or, you know, one ventures a little bit of a conversation, the other kind of shyly responds. And that's Grihastha life, right? Grihastha life, you got house, kid, bills, dishes, you know, rugs to vacuum, and, you know, clothes to wash, and, you know, and all kinds of, you know, this, that's the reality. So they never take that, but somehow that's enough. They're convinced that this is perfect. You know? So that's the problem. That's why in the Vedic thing, is this was not a way to establish a marriage. That someone else established it for you. Your parents did it, someone else did it. You know, someone arranged it for you because you're, you know, at the time, you know, so pleasantly stupid that you can't, you know, work these things out. You know? So therefore others work it out and figure out, you know. It's a problem. Until the society basically kind of figures this out, it's a problem. So if they can discuss, then great. That's better. So I've seen some zones, what they do is they've worked out, you know, all the different things that are there in marriage, you know, by talking with others and by taking from the Shastra. And they make a whole long list, you know, of options or things where you describe or things like that, what it is you're looking for. And then everybody who wants to get married fills this thing out. Then they look at the things and then they see, okay, this form and this form, they match. You know, both want children, both want to live in the temple, both want to do this, both want to, you know, like this. And so they see this may be good. Then they check and see if they can relate to each other. They check the charts and then they check and see if they can relate to each other. And then they go. But in some way it has to be done by some kind of, you know, subtle or gross method. In some way it must be done. Or they have to be greatly, you know, they have to be very much situated in following the third verse of the Sukshastika. If they can do that, then anything can work. Humble, tolerant, respect others, and not expect respect for yourself. Then you can make anything work. So that's one end. And the other end is figuring out all this, you know, troublesome little details of, you know, your material desires and needs. You know, so anything in between. That's the scope if you want it to work. If you don't want to bother with any of that, then 2 to 3 years is a standard, you know, is considered a good marriage. You know?
Still, there is no perfect marriage.
You can't.
Because human beings keep changing. Today you are a good devotee, tomorrow you are things are
But that's on the devotional platform.
But even if it's not devotional, otherwise we have made a pact, you know, so many conditions, we are matching. Tomorrow your ideas change, you are evolving all the time.
Yeah, but that means that person's not a religious person. Because otherwise, once they've said, I'm going to do this, they would do it. So a virtuous person would stick it out. So amongst Brahmin Kshatriyas, you would expect it would work. Vaishyas most likely work because of social pressure. Sudras may or may not work if you work on that platform. But, you know, but the problem is that the social pressure in the Sudra area is so strong, and everybody knows everybody, and they're in these little villages and all that. Therefore you can't. The modern thing where you don't know your neighbor, therefore you can do whatever you like. But in the original, it would work because everybody knows you. So if this woman leaves, everybody knows she's left, and she'll be, you know, she'll be disregarded by the whole community. So then they don't, even though they love to.
I'm talking from the modern standpoint.
Yeah, so the modern, we're saying that. Nothing works. I'm just giving ideas. Okay. But the point is, these ideas are 101% better than what is being used today. That's what we're saying. But you can't say it's perfect. I mean, even Shiva and Parvati, who is a perfect match, they get into arguments. Like that. Because you can't match, means male and female don't match perfectly. They're different. So they're going to be different. It's just the way it is.
Eventually, some level.
Yeah, you're looking for complementary. You're not looking for the same. You're looking for complementary. So, you know, that's the whole thing. So the problem here is the soul is thinking it's going to work on the material platform, but it's not, because here complementary means you have male and female, but the problem here is you have two females who think they're both males. So therefore, unless they follow religious principles, and one of them decides, okay, I'll be the female, and the other one, I'll be the male, and I'll follow these rules, you follow those, then you can make some kind of thing work. But on other levels, it works because Parvati is female and Shiva is male. So it does work. You know, Vishnu and Lakshmi, he is male, she is female, so it works. But here, you have two females who think they're males. So it's bound to failure. Unless you follow the guidelines given by God on what is a male and what is a female, then you can make it work. It's funny, but it's reality. It's very difficult.
Nothing is likely to work properly. It's not a place meant for that.
It's not. The point is it can't work, because if it did work, you'd stay in illusion. It can't work because it is illusion. And the whole point is if we are trained enough, then we realize that it doesn't work. You've tried your best. It was a perfect match. Everything went nice. You did all your duties. She did all her duties. Everything was wonderful like that, but still you're not satisfied because it still doesn't work out. You still didn't get what you wanted. But you got as close as you could. You know, that's why it's recommended that it's perfect, because then you can't say, well, if it had been like this, then it would have been okay. You did everything perfect. It was perfect. So therefore, then what you can complain about? Then you can the only conclusion you can come to is it's the material energy. So therefore, I should give this up and go for the spiritual. That's why the difficulty comes, is that it didn't work with this one because it was this woman. But that woman will be great, rather than all women are like this and all men are like that, so it'll never work.
It's not meant to work.
No, it's not meant to work. See, we're only presenting these from a positive side because there is such social disunity and lack of community that devotees are giving up their Krishna consciousness in pursuit of it. Like that. Only for that reason then I bring it up in such a positive light. Because is if they're needing these things, then if they take up according to Krishna's direction, they'll get as close as possible, then it will be very easy to make the decision, it doesn't work. But as it is, then you tell them it won't work, and they'll say, no, this woman was bad, this man was bad, this kid was bad, this job was bad, this was bad. It's always someone else's fault. They're perfect, and enjoying in the material world is fine. So therefore, it's like, okay, you want to work, this is how you do it. You're not going to find it by your method. You'll go on and on and on and on and on. But if you follow like this, you behave with a woman like this, you might find a change. You know, those who are doing it, their life's working okay. Then it's kind of like, you know, you're moving them from sinful methods to pious methods. Then, because the pious methods are in goodness, then there's knowledge, then there's illumination, then they can see it doesn't work. But the methods of passion and ignorance of the modern culture, there's no illumination there. So therefore it just makes more illusion. So therefore it's an inferior system to use. Though you can use it, but the result of it is not that you had a pleasant situation and then you saw, oh, this is useless. You have such a bad experience that for a certain amount of time you reject it. So now during that time of rejection you can put into them attachment to Krishna. Then when they come back, if they either go back to Godhead in that time, or when they come back to the emotional needs, they're on a more purified pious platform, then now they could do it according to pious methods. But if that doesn't happen, the switch back is too soon, then they'll just again go back into the methods, and they'll have to be kicked around by Maya so much, and then they'll finally come, you know, with the tail between the legs back, and you know, and after doing that many, many times, then yes, because it works. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Narad Muni says the Malechas and Yavanas, they're doing all their nonsense. They say it's auspicious. You ask them, you know, what did you do yesterday, last night? Oh, we were at a, you know, New Year's Eve party. It was great, you know, and like that, you know. But they had, you know, they got a headache and all this. And that. It was very auspicious, you know. It went nice. There was plenty to drink. There was plenty of fun. There was plenty of sex. It was great. It was auspicious. You know, it's completely inauspicious. But for them, it's auspicious. In their tradition, it is. In their line, it is. So you leave it. You don't bother. You leave them, you know. But by doing that, they'll get so roasted that they'll have a doubt whether material energy will give happiness. You know?
But that's the purpose of material energy. Fry everybody.
Yeah.
To the extent that they realize it.
Yeah. No. Yeah, yeah. So then it's just a question of how you want to be fried. You know? That's all. You know, do you want to be fried in a very rough manner or in a very pleasant, sophisticated manner? That's all. So the Vedic culture gives a very pleasant, sophisticated manner. No rough, gentle. In a very nice way, you've been roasted. Or and the non-Vedic means that in a very rough, nasty, completely, you know, disturbing way, you get roasted. You know, it's like Prabhupada. He was roasted when his wife sold his Bhagavatam and then laughed about it. You know, she needed some biscuits. What's the big deal? It was a book. She was a nice wife, did everything perfectly. He was roasted with that. You know, well, someone else, then, you know, it takes a lot more. You know, after, you know, three times going through, you know, big divorce cases and losing everything and completely the woman he thought had affection is there in the court and testifying against him in the most outrageous ways and many of their lies and this and that. Then he understands, wow, maybe I shouldn't get involved. So your point is the purpose, you know. The grihastha life is meant that at the end of the day you understand that this was useless. That's the purpose of it. You know? That's the ultimate.
And Maharaj, on this, it's also the, if we have nice community, nice marriages, it's also very good for preaching. If we don't have this, then people saying, well, they're only seeing the external. They're saying, well, they're saying this Krishna consciousness on us, but you can't run it.
Yeah, but we're saying, listen, you know, we're trying to go back to Godhead, not make it here. You know, that's one thing. Or you say, what do you want? You take a bunch of bozos, what do you want from them? You know, so we're doing the best we can. How are you doing? At least we're spiritually advancing. Spiritually we're satisfied, materially we're not. You know, you're neither spiritually or materially. So therefore, you know, what's, you know, and of the two, even if you're materially satisfied, but still spiritual is lacking, which of the two is more important? So therefore, even from that way, you can get around it. You know, you can just say, you know, what do you want? Or, you know, means the guy here was living like you. Suddenly they're going to walk in and become some great saint. Or, well, you know, what do you want? You know. Means you could use that method here because that's the way the Aussies are. You know, you can say like that. No, no, okay. I'll drink to that. Okay. So Dandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitya Gaura Prabhupada.